meaning of the word masa. Masa, there are 10 lashonis for prophecy, and we'll just masa means to be lifted up. Is that correct? Masa means kisiso.
Kisiso. Talk about it as a heavy burden.
A heavy burden. A masa is a heavy burden. A nevuah is a heavy burden. It's like a woman who is pregnant. A woman who's pregnant, the baby is coming out one way or another. There's no way, that's for sure. The baby is coming out one way or another, whether the baby is alive or not, it's coming out. Masa.
Maybe it's uplifting.
Oh, okay, that's Yisa. That's what I wanted to say. That Masa comes from the Yisa. Ki Sisa es Reish B'nei Yisrael. So Rambachol said it's a burden, which means there's something that's very true to what Rambachol said, is that when a Navi has, I mean, we showed him since, when a Navi has a prophecy, he has to release it. He has to, he cannot live with himself. He cannot, the nature, we have absolutely no clue, no understanding of what it means to be a prophet. Prophecy is beyond our understanding. But we see theoretically all the different ideas that are expressed in throughout Tanakh that give us a little bit of a glimpse of what exactly is the nature of prophecy. It's all theoretical, it's all just words. Obviously, when a person will experience prophecy, he'll tell us that everything that you've learned about prophecy is meaningless. The experience of prophecy cannot possibly be expressed in words, and all of the descriptions that you've heard about, yeah, they're very nice, but it doesn't come anywhere near to the real experience of prophecy. People tell this to you all the time about all different types of events in life. You can describe what's coming, but when you go through the experience, all of the preparation, all of the training that you've had could never ever possibly prepare you for the real life experience. So we can study prophecy forever. We can never really fully understand what prophecy is until we experience it. But we don't have the experience, so at least we can try. We can just play around and read the words.
We may not be able to know, to experience the phenomenon of it, but we can describe the roles of another.
Okay, that's not the actual experience of prophecy. We study their words. We study their message. When they gave over their message, the people that were listening were not experiencing prophecy. They were just listening. I'm assuming, unless you'll tell me an idea, that the people who listen to prophecy also experience some extension.
Not what I was referring to.
Yeah.
Referring to, I've read in the written life book, it talks about the teaching role, the oracular role, which means to tell the future. And a few other things.
Okay.
Various nevuos fall into those categories.
So, Michal started off with the idea that masa is a burden, and that's very true. A person has a message. Hashem has put into his mind the message. He has to release the message.
Unburden himself
by letting go and by giving over the message. They say this about rabbis. A rabbi is pregnant with a sermon. You hear that expression? A rabbi is pregnant.
I never hear about the rabbi is pregnant.
Not in the Orthodox communities. Well, there is an expression that the rabbi is pregnant with a drasha. What does that mean? A woman who is pregnant is going to give birth whether she likes it or not. She will not be able to contain the uber in her belly. This is the mitzias in the world. The fetus will come out one way or another. A rabbi that prepared a sermon, there's no way in the world he's going to be able to keep it in. He's going to have to say over that sermon, give it out, get the sermon off his chest one way or another. If not this Shabbos, next Shabbos, if not next Shabbos, he'll come to your house and tell it to you. That's so. Therefore, a prophecy is the same idea. It's a burden. It's a masa. It has to be released. Rav Kalman said that the word masa comes from the word kisisa es roish bnei Yisrael. Prophecy is an uplifting experience. It elevates. The experience itself elevates you. You walk away from the experience refreshed. People have different types of jobs. Okay, you go. Sometimes you work in whatever you do, and then when the day is over, 9 to 5. No such thing as 9 to 5. It's 9 to 9. It's really, really more like 7 to 9. And you come home from the job. How do you feel when the day is over from work? That's a very good question to ask. What kind of job you have? It's always the litmus test. If you come home from work at 9 o'clock at night, and you feel wiped out, completely wiped out, there's something wrong. That means you really don't enjoy what you're doing. It's a burden. Listen, you got to pay the bills. That's life. I almost know no one. There's almost no one in this world that likes what they do. That's the way it goes. That's part of b'zeas apecha toicha lechem. But if a person enjoys, he comes home, he works like a dog from 7 in the morning until 9 at night, he comes home at night and he's uplifted. He's in a really great mood and he feels fulfilled and he feels satisfied despite the fact that he's extremely tired. That is an uplifting experience. A prophet, Hashem puts to their mind the message and they go and they give over the message. Ki sisa es roish b'nei Yisrael. There's a sense of fulfillment, an uplifting experience. It's a pleasure to give Musa to Klal Yisrael. Even though they want to assassinate the messenger, even though they pluck out the hairs of his beard and they attempt to feed him poison, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, they made upon an assassination attempt on his life. They put him in a dungeon in quicksand. They literally took tweezers to pluck out his beard. He was tormented. And he cursed the day he was born. Did Yirmiyah ever say a prophecy with the word Masal Yirmiyah? I don't know. Maybe he didn't. Maybe that was the problem. But Micha here uses a word. There are 10 words used in Tanakh to describe the experience of prophecy. Here we're using one of those 10 words, Masal. And according to Rav Kalman, the word Masal is rooted in the same Mishorish as uplifting, ki sisa es resh b'nei Yisrael, and therefore
lead them and uplift them, because they are the Israel.
Lift. So there's an uplifting experience. Uplifting experience. So Masa Dvar Hashem.
Isn't the Masa also a heavy weight?
So it's, we start before you came, we explained that. Another interpretation. That means that the other interpretation is Masa means a burden. Which means that you have to unburden yourself. A Navi, once Hashem puts in the mind of a prophet a message that has to be related to the Jewish people, it's painful. It is painful to walk the streets carrying that message without releasing it and letting people know. You can't keep a secret. Think about this idea. Keeping secrets is painful. I don't know if you ever experienced this. You get inside information and you're forewarned, it's a secret, do not tell anyone. Sometimes they don't warn you, they just, someone in confidence tells you information that no one's supposed to know. Whatever reason, they wanted your advice, or they need you, you have something that they need, so they have no choice but to tell you information. This is the difference between greatness and people who are not great. The ability to keep secrets. This is not a small matter. The importance and how critical it is to keep a secret. Some people can't do that. I can't do that. I really can't. Don't tell me any secrets.
It's the nature of human beings. Like, we had the juice
to give over social media. Or that's Lashon Hara. But even when it's not really in the category of Lashon Hara, even if we take out that element, okay, even though you're right, everything is a secret, so it is to a degree Lashon Hara. I mean, they're obviously intertwined. But even if you were to take out the element of Lashon Hara, it is a very difficult thing to really do. It sounds very easy. Many people don't. No one tells them anything, so it's not relevant for them. Yes.
I think it's a matter of self-training. If you learn to keep our mouth shut, don't repeat anything.
Exactly. So it's a matter of self-training. Everything in life is self-training.
You're keeping the secret.
Everything in life is self-training.
Don't define what you can say and what you can't say. I think the definition should be
just keep our mouths shut.
Rabbanim and Rebbes and leaders, the entire day, from Mashmeres Habayik Ado Erev, people come to them and reveal private information because they need advice or they need that the rabbi should know something because whatever the reason is. And their head is filled with secrets, incredible secrets, all different types of secrets. And it is very easy for a person to slip and say even one word or to say something, and even to your own wife, your own family. And a sign of greatness, like you always wonder, why did Hashem select the Hashgacha? We have to believe in Hashgacha Pratis. The Rambam says, you know, everything that happens in this world is Bahashgacha. And you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he puts into position of leader, into leadership, people that we always wonder, what is this guy doing here? Why is he the rabbi, this person? He doesn't seem to be the brightest, the smartest. He doesn't seem to have, you know, what a typical the expectations you would have from a typical person. And yet, the bottom line is, he's in charge. Hashem, and you can't say, oh, it's just an accident, it's just... No, you can't say that. Everything that happens that affects our lives in a significant way, even that significant way, is Bahashkocha. And I've always sort of felt, I don't know if this is true, that a very incredible element in why you see that Hashem selects certain people to lead, they know how to keep secrets. They really know how to keep secrets. They know how to keep their mouth shut. You have other people that are very charismatic and very good speakers, very smart. Oh, if only he was the rabbi, only he was the Rosh Shiva. And then maybe sometimes, you know, you don't know Hashem's cheshbonos. No, I don't know. No, of course, obviously I don't know, but no one knows. I always had this suspicion. I can't tell you which. I always had this suspicion that in Hashem's book, a major skill in Hashem's criteria of who he's going to appoint in his world to lead is a person who really knows how to keep secrets. It's not a simple matter to do. And I don't know if you've had these nisyonos where you actually know and you have to really be careful to keep your mouth shut and not tell things over. And like I'm thinking of a certain person. You don't know what I'm thinking about. You don't know. And like he's whatever, he's not really around anymore, and a lot of people were not necessarily very excited about him, but I know one thing about him, he knows how to keep a secret. He doesn't. He's not a gossip monger. He knows. The people brought to him serious things. You never know what goes to his ears, and he doesn't tell anyone, not his wife. Not his children, right. And it's a very powerful skill. A navi here is called Masa. Rav Michal pointed this out. What is a Masa? And here of Mordechai. This is your sefer, by the way. Mordechai Bienenstock. Are you related to Jack and the Beanstalk?
Oh, he never heard that one before.
He never heard that one before. Well, you're lush and saggy nor. Okay, but Malachi, some say is Mordechai. Or Mordechai HaYehudi is Malachi. We'll get that later on over here. So this is really your sefer. That's why you right away have me on the first word. Masa is a burden. Why is it a burden for the Navi? Why is it a burden? Why is a proud? Because obviously, when Hashem gives a Navi a Nevuah, Hashem's, I'm assuming, part of the mission is you will release this information, deliver the message in a very specific time and moment. Maybe in 30 years from now. We have precedent to this. Where Hashem gives a person, a Navi, a message, a prophecy, and Hashem says, not now. I want you to release the bird. I want you to release the message in 30 years from now, 40 years, 50 years from now. That means the Navi has to carry in his mind the secret, the message. The message
is what to do with the information.
What do you do with the information? He has
Hashem
to give.
Hashem's giving him a secret.
Yes.
Is Hashem always telling him what to do, or just giving?
Well, it depends. Every situation is different.
Right, so if he has information, and Hashem doesn't tell him what to do with it. He has to decide how to use that information.
Correct, but let's make it very, very simple. Let's assume, just for the sake of simplicity, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a Navi a message today, and he says, I gave it to you today for a reason that you don't know, it's not important for you to know, but I don't want you to relay this prophecy, wait 30 years. 30 years from now, you wait until I tell you to release the information. Maybe I'll tell you when to release the information. Can you imagine what it's like for the Navi? The Navi has in his mind a powerful message that may change the lives of his the listeners, and the Navi has to carry this message in his mind for 30 years. That's a burden. That's quite a burden. If a person that knows a little teeny nourish a secret, a little secret which
or
is
even, or even a big secret.
What?
Or even a big secret.
Any secret.
People have
secrets. And it's a burden.
Big secret. And they have to sign on the dotted line.
I'm not going to tell anyone. There's a gag order, right?
Not just that.
Anything in life. Anything in life. Right. Anything in life. Yeah. I mean, this is nice in every single little thing in life. So when Hashem tells you something. It's one thing if you go and you read the newspaper or something, you know, whether it's a secret, whatever it is. But if Hashem tells you something, wow, this is incredible stuff, explosive stuff. I want to go reveal it. I want to go reveal the information. Rabbi Chol is our in-house political expert. In Arizona, there are people that know the result of the forensic audit.
Right.
So don't you think the people who know the result, don't you think they have a hard time going to sleep? They want to tell the whole world what happened, what they discovered? No? If it's something big?
But we can't.
They can't. Why can't you? Because you're not allowed to until the right time. But don't you think it's a burden if there is something very big to be said?
There's someone who I...
Oh, yes, but he already knows the secret. You see, he already knows the secret.
Someone who appears every day and I can see it's just...
Obvious what he knows, this person knows? He's on
very,
the inside?
Very close.
Very close, but now he doesn't... Whatever.
And he's
very
close,
excited. Okay.
Very close.
But
you can see, it's just killing him.
You imagine a prime minister...
It's killing him that he can't say.
...the secret of the country...
Right.
...to his opponent, whom he hates and he doesn't trust. But he has to leave
him. It's secrets. It's painful. It's painful to withhold the secrets.
Yeah.
Someone here in this shul, he went, I told this many times, he was part of a delegation who went to the White House. They sat in the White House with Bush W. This goes back a long time. Sonu Da was in this shul. He went, he was part of an OU delegation to go to the White House, and he sat there with the President of the United States, George W. Bush, in the Oval Office for over an hour. About 15 members of the OU. And President W. Bush told these people, what you hear in the news is not even 10% of what's really going on. I'm here in the Oval Office and they bring me information every few minutes of what's really going on. And we cannot release this information for whatever the reasons are. The world cannot know what goes through my ears for whatever the reason. And we have to do things because of what we hear, what's going on. And the media, they don't know what's going on. They challenge us. They think we're nuts. What in the world are you doing? What are you doing? What's going on over here? And you only know 10% of what's going on. If you knew the other 90%, you would keep quiet. But we can't tell you what's really going on.
Some of it might even be true.
Some of it, Michal says, that was a different generation. Okay, when this W. Bush, today we're living in a whole different world. But you understand the principle. It is a painful experience to withhold a secret. And most people have a very low threshold of pain. A very low threshold of pain. Okay, and if a person who has a very high threshold of pain, it's not for nothing when you look, I tell you, this is my suspicion, my hergish, that I've seen this over the years. Like I told you, you wonder, why did Hashem, Bahashkocha Pratis, put certain people in position? And I suspect that in Hashem's book, of qualities that Hashem is looking for is a person that knows how to keep secrets. You really, it's not so easy. And this idea is expressed here in the very first word of a Navi. Hashem, there's no more pain, there's no greater thing that a person wants to reveal than a prophecy, because a prophecy is MS. It's the truth. When you go and tell someone information, the first thing they say to you, oh, you're a liar, conspiracy theory, nonsense, shtus, hevel, total, I don't want to hear from this crazy nonsense, leave me alone. And then you say to yourself, maybe they're right. How do I know that I'm telling them is true? Do I really know? I read something online. Do I know it's true? I told them information. Do I know? I don't know it's true. I get a hergish that it's true. I don't really know if it's really true. It's an exaggeration. And I tell someone, and they don't like it. They reject it. You know, maybe they're right. Maybe I should keep my mouth shut. But when Hashem tells you something, this is MS. This is unadulterated MS. You're eager. It's delicious to tell over this information. And I can't. Hashem says, wait for the right time. Wait. Masa. It's painful. It's like you're carrying on your shoulders 500 pounds. You're crushed by the pain of withholding the secret until the proper time. That's greatness. A person who's able to have that high threshold of pain, that is greatness. You ever go to the dentist? I went to the dentist yesterday. You know, you need a lot of strength to withhold pain. Even though they can numb you all you want, they can choke you to death. They can do a lot of things there. Just, you know, the anesthesia doesn't do everything. There's a lot of other things that go on.
A good example is when you are called, you know, if you said he's alive or not. But his father, it's hard.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Because time will come.
Phenomenal. Kalman is the Gadol Hador. He said, he hit the nail on the head. You hear what Yisrael Kalman says? The greatest is Yitzchak Avinu. Rashi says Yitzchak knew that Yosef was alive. He knew the MS. Why didn't he tell Yaakov? Yaakov suffered for 22 years. He knew Hashem doesn't want him to reveal this information. Can you imagine how painful it was for Yitzchak? To watch his son Yaakov suffer, and he couldn't tell him the good news. He's alive. Od Yosef Chai. That's why Yitzchak was Yitzchak. That's why Yitzchak is Yitzchak Avinu. Because Yitzchak had the gadlus to be able to hold the secret. Could you imagine the masa, the burden Yitzchak experienced? That's greatness. Greatness is to train yourself. See over here, we have another Gadol Hador over here. We have Mark. Mark, this is like Pasha. You just train yourself to keep secrets. It's no big deal. I don't know about you, but for the average guy like me, it's not so easy. And you really, I've felt this sensation many, many times over the years, and I've come to be humbled. And I say to myself, that's why he's who he is and why I'm a nobody. Because I see it's a tremendous koyach of restraint, of keeping the information locked up, no one's business. No rebbes, no one's mekana a rebbe. What do they do the whole day, rebbes? They learn? No. They don't learn. They daven? No. What do they do the whole day, rebbes? They sit the whole day and listen to tzaras. They live the whole day.
Rabbi,
yeah.
I think the opposite is being more true. I think it's harder for the nabi to say what Hashem wants them to say. Very often.
Okay, so you're saying a different idea.
Rabbi Eliezer,
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Rabbi Eliezer is saying an entirely different idea. Okay, we already have three ideas. He's saying the masa is because the words are so damaging and so horrific, this predicting, giving of information of a Holocaust, a Chorban, Beis HaMikdash, the end and pain and suffering and death. So it's too much for the Navi, the Masa, is to tell the other people the bad news. Right now in California, they find the body, and they identify who the body is.
Florida.
What?
Florida.
It's Florida, what did I say? Florida, what did I say? Florida. How? I'm not Mekana the person who has to go to the family and tell them the bad news that we found.
The Israeli group was on TV last night.
Yeah.
And he said he honestly tells him there's a slight chance that someone's alive, but not likely.
Okay, but let's say Rachmana
Litzlan. He's very honest with them. He said there's no point giving him hope for the real.
Of course, right, of course. And what happens when they find the body? Could you imagine the person who has to be the one to tell over the information? What? It's a horrific experience. You know, they have it, you know, in the army. They have in the army, they only read these stories where, you know, when someone dies in war, let's say right now in Iraq, in Afghanistan, anywhere. So there's a whole procedure there. They have professionally trained soldiers that come to the house to inform the family that their loved one died, was killed in battle. And, you know, these people are trained professionally exactly what to say, how to say it. Usually, unfortunately, just showing up at the house, standing there in their uniform, ringing the bell, usually that itself already says it all. But you know, it's a horrific thing. So Eliezer over here is telling us another pshat that when it says about the masa masa, the pain is giving over bad news. So sach hakol, we have over here three mahalchim for the first word of Sefer Malachi. Why is this prophecy called a masa? Either it's a masa, as Rav Kalman said, it's an uplifting experience. It's an uplifting experience when you come home at night, you feel fulfilled. I've done something for Klal Yisrael. I've done something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an exhilarating experience to be Hashem's messenger. People are looking for fulfillment in life. Not everyone knows money. Okay, what are you going to do with all the money? You also want to have some fulfillment in life. It's an uplifting experience. The second interpretation of Masa is part of the job of being a prophet is to keep secrets. And when Hashem gives over information to the Navi and the Navi sees things, part of that is obviously you have to release the information in the right time and the right place. When the audience is receptive, how many times are you going to say over a vart? Many times I have experience, you say over a vart. And the people, they're just not interested. They're not interested in listening. You could have the best toichen, the best story, the best jokes, the best vart. If the audience is not receptive to hearing the message, it's worthless. And if you go and you have an audience that's thirsty, you can tell them Narishkeit. And they'll just gobble it down. A Navi has to wait for the right time and the right place to get a bang for his buck. Yet in the meantime, you have to hold the secret. That's painful. That's a masa. And Eliezer's third shot is just the opposite, that the information over here, usually of a Navi, is usually very painful and damaging and horrible. And no one's mekana them for being the bearer of bad news, and therefore it's a very big burden to take on such a profession to give over bad news. Okay, now let's go further in the pasuk. The first word, Masa Dvar Hashem El Yisrael, to Yisrael. Notice it does not say to Yaakov. Yisrael is always a lashon of the greatness of the Jewish people. Biyad Malachi through Malachi. Let's just learn one part just to get a little, you know, a little intro into he was the last of the prophets. Malachi, I told you many times, Malachi, many say, some say, at least according to one of the very good Sephardim that I use, Jewish history, one of the best Sephardim. We spent time on this, and he says that the Malachi died 40 years into the Bayis Sheni. Malachi, he died, his death occurred at the same time, I don't know, the same day, but the same tekufa of when Alexander the Great conquered the world. Alexander Mokdon, he conquered the world, and Shimon HaTzadik was serving as the Kohen Gadol, and he went out of the Beis HaMikdash with his entourage to be mekabel Alexander the Great and to prevent him, to beg from him not to destroy Yerushalayim Yer HaKadosh. And Alexander the Great agreed in exchange for two things. From that era, all male children who were born were called Alexander. And that's why any Alexander we have today goes back to Alexander the Great. And even the Alexander Hasidim were the most numerous, by far, of all of the Hasidim pre-war pre-Holocaust, the Alexander Hasidim suffered the greatest korban from all of the sects of Hasidim. They completely, Mamash Kamak, completely wiped out. It's unbelievable. They were the largest, and there's only, they have now a very small, in Borough Park, they have something that's very, it's not, I shouldn't say that, they think it's very choshev, but unfortunately the numbers are not there. And that all comes from Alexander the Great, from Shimon HaTzadik, going back to the time of Malachi. Alexander, anyone who has Alexander, his name comes from the Tukufa, at the death of Malachi. He was the last prophet.
Are you saying he was around when?
No, it seems not. It seems that it's, or I don't know. I don't know the calendar date when he died and when. But it was the same Tukufa. The tradition is the tradition is that Malachi died 40 years into the beginning of the Bayis Sheni.
But definitely after
what? And Shimon HaTzadik. Yes. After Chagai and Chazal,
they were concurrent.
They were together. They were a team. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. But from
the Anshei Knesset Hadagol,
right, correct. Chagai, Zechariah were part of the Anshei Knesset. The Anshei Knesset 120 men. Anshei Knesset Hadagol is a very complicated thing. When did it start? When did it end? It's Anshei Knesset Hadagol is a very abstract topic. When exactly did when did the Anshei Knesset Hadagol open up shop? When did they have their cornerstone laying ceremony? So it seems in the beginning, or even before the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. But they existed all the way, I think, through the entire era of the Bayis Sheni, they existed. They started out, it was an institution that was established to lead Klal Yisrael. There were originally 120 members. And there was a hierarchy how to get into who was elected. And then very quickly, it seems very quickly, they were not able to fill the quota of 120. People died, and new people were appointed, but the new people that were appointed never replenished the original number of 120. So by the time you're up to the Churban Bayis Sheni, 420 years later, how many members were there officially in this body? Doesn't seem like there were 120. They were down to 80, 70, 60, because there just were no qualified candidates to occupy the seats of this body called the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. And obviously their role in Klal Yisrael changed dynamically as Klal Yisrael went from the Bayis Sheni, the beginning of the building of the Bayis Sheni, all the way through the Churban 420 years later. Okay, so it's a very complicated organization. You want to make out a check, a tax deductible check, I'm sure we'll find someone that will take it from you. I think Meir Appeldorf, he's the Rosh of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Okay,
and this dot. That's why Knesset of Israel has 120 members.
The Knesset, I never knew that. That's they had 120 members, 120 members of the Knesset.
That's why you need a 61 majority.
Oh, I never knew that. I don't know anything about that. Okay, very interesting. You really think that's where I highly doubt that. Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Very interesting. I'm sure on Wikipedia you must tell you why they have 120. I highly doubt they would draw from the early Zionists. They would draw from maybe okay, could be. Sorry, they said that right.
That's the
semicircle. They have that's look in Congress also. They sit in the semicircle.
All right.
That's from the Sanhedrin.
Right.
That's from the Sanhedrin.
Right.
In Yavne, it says Kedem biYavne. There bedavka they did not sit in the semicircle. They sat in rows, like a vineyard. They sat bedavka in rows, not in steps. So what's talking about in order to show we are not the Sanhedrin? We're not going to make believe the Sanhedrin. Chazal was the Pharisee says in the Mishnah, and I forgot the Hebrew term. It says in the Mishnah that the Sanhedrin in the Lishkas Hagozis they sat in a semicircle. When they went and made a yeshiva in Kedem B'Yavne, they didn't want they should say, oh, we're going to imitate the Sanhedrin. We're not the Sanhedrin. We're just a yeshiva. even though we have the greatest Talmidei Chachamim here, we're just a yeshiva. And they said bidavka, like a vineyard in rows. That's one shot. There are many perushim. Others say that they were in disguise. When the government was shas hashmad, and when the government would come to go and see, what are you learning Torah? Well, no, we're not learning Torah. This is a vineyard. This is a plantation. This is a kibbutz. We're not learning Torah over here. So they disguise the yeshiva as a vineyard. I know I used to go to a little yeshiva around the corner. They never had a sign. They never had a sign on the door. You would never even know the inside was a yeshiva. And the place was mamash achorbin. What looked like the floor, the tiles, what the place looked like. And it was thriving. Thriving. Literally, you could not even find a place to stand. And then, all of a sudden, one day I come there, and there's a sign, a big sign outside. From that time on, that place, a nosedive. When there was no sign, and the Gashmius was way, way below standard, it probably was even illegal, it was probably even dangerous, it was thriving. And now we have beautiful floors, beautiful Aron Kodesh, new lighting, everything, the Gashmius is top of the line, it's safe and secure, and there's a big sign outside, but no one comes. Go figure. That means that no one comes, I shouldn't say it. It's not what it used to be, nothing near. So go figure. It just goes to show, it's not the building, it's not the building, it's not the sign, it's the people. It's the people. I mean, you wouldn't believe what the conditions were. But you know, that's what it is. It's not the Gashmis that makes a Mokim. What makes a Mokim are the people. The people. Obviously it's a lot of that. Very nice to have good Gashmis. Okay, let's go further. So yeah, over here, Master Rashad Malachi. So Malachi over here, let's see, we have the Mitzvah Stav. Through one pasuk, it's already pretty late. Through the Mitzvah Stav, we have this one pasuk. On the bottom, Biad Malachi, Hanishlach Biad Malachi, the Mitzvah Stav, it says, the word of Hashem, he adds a word into the text that was sent. HaKadosh Baruch Hu dispatched a message. Don't shoot the messenger. He's the messenger through Malachi. Rashi.
It's amazing that he used the word Biad. Like,
Biyadi Kiyadcha,
as if Hashem is talking.
Biyad. It's a very interesting to study all the prophets to see which prophet this term is used, Biyad. Go through all the, there are 48 prophets, to see when all the messages that were delivered through the prophets, obviously, that Chazal do discuss in detail when it says the word Masa, the 10 Nuschois, the 10 times of prophecy, that is discussed. And also they always discuss when it says a prophet how he, with his title, is he called his name and his father, his grandfather, or we just refer to him by his own name. We don't mention his father's name. Most of the prophets we mention their father. Here we do not mention his father. Whenever we mention his father, the Chazal tells that means that just like he was a prophet, his father was a prophet. Now does that make a difference? Does that add more potency to his prophecy if he is the child of a prophet? I would assume yes. There's something to Yichus. Don't let anyone tell you not. There is a very great value to Yichus. Even though people, you know, people get carried away. You know, I remember the story, the Mashkich Chaim, we always say, the story is a bunch of rebbes. They were all, I told you the story, they're all sitting around the table. All the grosse rebbes, the Moetzes Rebbeis Shel Yisrael. Do they have such an organization? They have the Moetzes Rebbes, Gedoyli HaRebbes, Shelly Yisrael, all sitting around the table, and they were all bragging. You know who I am? My Zayde was this one, my Elta Zayde. And they go to the next one, you know who I am? I'm this, my Zayde, my Elta Zayde. I'm a Ben Benoy, Shel this one, the Hulu. And then they come to the last Rebbe, who had no Yichus, zero. His father was a baker, a simple baker. Rei Parnosa, he went in the middle of the night to bake some bread. So he said, you know, b'mechilas kevoy b'moetzes kidele harebes shel Yisrael. My father was a very simple man. He knew David. He said some Tehillim. He He didn't know much Gemara. Anav was showing him in Mishnayis. He was a simple Erlechayid. He was a baker. He told me one thing, my father. There's nothing like a fresh bagel. All you guys are stale. Okay, so this is an old joke, but the truth is, Rabbi Yisai, there is something to Yichus. There's no question about it. And, you know, it took me time to learn that in life. I learned the hard way, coming in contact with people. And I can definitely say, after dealing with it's true, it's a dangerous game. It's a double-edged sword. But if a person wants to take advantage, to tap in to his Yichus, the Koichos HaNefesh, the investment that his ancestors put into his neshama, is what to tap into. Listen, the problem is not everyone knows how to tap into it. Those hidden koichos hanefesh, that's a big problem. You have to know how to unlock those koichos hanefesh. But you see people that don't have yichus, it's much harder for them. There's no question, there's something to yichus. And here we have Malachi, Malachi over here, it does not appear to have the same yichus as some of the other prophets, because we did not mention his father's name. That's always an introduction to a new sefer. We always have Rabbi Chazal, if it mentions the father's name. Oh, call per any Navi where it says their name and their father, their grandfather. It means they were also prophets. Oh, so where's the prophecy from their father? It wasn't relevant for generations. We only record in Tanakh information that is relevant for us today here in the year 2021 in Chutz Liaretz L'Misparam in Brooklyn, New York. So therefore, whatever Malachi said is relevant for us. What his father said, if his father was a prophet, even though it wasn't relevant. It was relevant maybe for them back then, but not for us. So therefore, it's not recorded. Okay, next. Rashi. Rashi says, Ma'asad Rashem. We now call upon Rabbeinu Michal to tell us what this word is. Number one, how to read the word. Number two, what does it mean?
I think it's two words, not one.
Two words, you see? Two words.
Port. Four means four.
Four. Four. Port.
And port, porte in French means to carry.
To carry.
Something to be carried.
Two words. Poor. Port. To carry. To carry. Masa means to carry on your shoulders. A burden, to carry something. Balaz. Balaz, I always tell you, Balaz is not French. Balaz is, remember, Shimon explained this to me at length. Explain to me what Balaz really means. Balaz is Russian famous. Balashin Am Zor.
That's right.
So what do they say in the Vel? Old French.
A foreign language word.
A foreign language. But he explained to me it has another flavor, Balaz. It means, like, it's basically the same exact thing as Yiddish. In other words, what is Yiddish? It's a Judified version of German. This real German, the real deal. I don't know, you have to go, I don't know from that language, but supposedly you go to Germany and you find certain groups of people, they speak the real German. They, over the generation, this certainly has changed. It has been adapted, it has organic. A language is organic, it changes. It changes.
When it's spoken, not when it's written.
Spoken, the spoken language. See, he's not here now, but he was a world-class expert in this. Harav, Dr. Colonel Shlomo Cohn, who is unfortunately not here at this moment, will come on later on. So he has degrees, he has very advanced degrees in language. And he'll explain to you how languages are organic, the spoken language is organic. So even German, that has nothing to do with Jews, obviously is not the same German from 1,000 years ago. But Yiddish was where Jews put themselves in the ghetto. Either they did or they were forced to be secluded from the non-Jews. And over time, they took the German language and they modified it, or
it's
it just they added expressions. Ma'amori Chazal, it's very rich because Ma'amori Chazal have been injected into the pure German form of the language, and that's how we come out today with the language of Yiddish, which is not the same as German. And there are so many, I don't know, I'm not familiar with these things, but there are so many Amish Sfarim going through the whole language Yiddish. and showing you the Ma'amori Chazal, the Jewish flavor of Yiddishkeit, how it was injected into German. Now, just like that is true for German, these words that Rashi are quoting is exactly the same for French. Rashi lived in France, and they spoke French, and there was a kehila of Jews, and they Judified French. You're not going to find these words in any dictionary. There might be some dictionaries where you find it, but when Rashi tells you Old French,
they're old French.
But it's not secular. French. It's not a secular Old French.
I'm trying to relate it to modern.
It's not a secular Old. If you're going to go to some library and find how they spoke French in the year in the 12th century, it's not going to necessarily conform with what Rashi says. Because Rashi is not talking about the pure French language in the 12th century, the 13th century, the 11th century. Rashi is talking about the Judified version of French. Just like Yiddish is a Judified form of German. Old French, when Rashi quotes a word and says Belaz, this is it's French, which has been modified and has organically transformed through the spoken form by Jews only. And there are no records, there is no dictionary of the equivalent of Yiddish for French back in those times. So you're not going to find it.
Which means you can't prove it one way
or another. Right, exactly. You can't prove one way or another. But Rashi in his time was basically giving you like a Yiddish translation. Just like today, let's say people only know Yiddish, so you want a Yiddish translation. So Rashi is giving us here basically a Yiddish translation. There are no books. There's no records anywhere of the Yiddish of the time in France in the 12th century. Even that, it's hard to come by such things. Okay, this is how Rabbi Schmidman explained to me when it says Belaz. You're going to go, people have tried very hard to go to take out French, go to libraries and uncover the way they spoke French in the 12th century. And they discovered that all these words that Rashi quotes are not there. So what is Rashi talking about? And the answer is, just like there's something called Yiddish, and Yiddish is a dialect of German. No, you don't agree with Michal?
There's another problem, because Rashi doesn't write in French. He writes in Hebrew letters, which are not...
Like Yiddish.
Don't always conform to the French way of
writing. What letters do we write is Yiddish?
I always see differences, because, you know...
Yiddish is written in Hebrew letters, and it's German, but it's the same idea. It's the same principle. There's German, and German has a dialect of Yiddish, which is the spoken form of Jews in Germany and the surrounding area for generations, which they've injected into the language, Mamori Chazal, and their way of life. And over 1,000 years, it took on a whole life of its own. It was the same thing for this language and other languages. And there are no dictionaries. They didn't bother making a dictionary of the Jewish form of French in those days, so you're not going to find it anywhere. I was once horrified. I told you this, I read an article, Rashi, Rashi's an anniversary of when he was born, and they interviewed, they wrote an article in one of the online somewhere. What is Rashi? Tell us Rashi's contribution to Klal Yisrael. What did Rashi contribute to Klal Yisrael? I ask anyone over here, you right away get shocked, right away you'll shake. I need to go tell you what Rashi did for Klal Yisrael. Rashi, the Rosh Tevis of Rashi, Rebbe Shlomo Yitzchaki, it's also Rabban Shel Yisrael. Okay? Rabban, Rashi is the teacher of Klal Yisrael. It's the quintessential teacher of Klal Yisrael. So that's what do you need to say? You don't need to say anything more than that. So what do they write in this article? Oh, you know, the Rashi is very great because he preserved for us old English. So in the Museum of Natural History, we have an exhibit, Old French. It's in the basement somewhere, some room you never heard of before. Oh, old French. In the museum, maybe you can get someone with $1 million to dedicate this room. Here we have a whole dictionary, about maybe 300 words. This is Rashi's contribution to the world. We have now, he preserved the old French words. What a horror. What a horror to say that. I mean, that's true, Fawn. Thank you very, very much for that very valuable piece of information. This is Rashi. Rashi preserved, this is his whole greatness of Rashi. He preserved, if not for Rashi, we wouldn't know about this language. Like the Indians, you know, they preserve some. Oh, you give out. That's how you're telling me the godless of Rashi? It's a pathetic.
It's amazing how we learn much without Rashi.
Impossible.
That's a great thing.
Yeah, the Rashi learned.
Rashi learned. Rashi had a Messiah. Eis lasses. In any event, when Rachel says over here, purot means
port.
To carry. Port. Poor port.
Poor carry.
To carry. Masa means to carry. Dover hanimsa lamalachi. Dover means words. A burden to carry. Masa is a burden. In old French, it means to carry. Davar hanimsa lemalachi l'loseis oisai el b'nei yisus. So Rashi clarifies what it means in this context. Davar, something, words, a matter that was given over, delivered to the malachi. L'loseis oisai, to carry. So this is, I think this is a different interpretation. This is even different than we said before, fourth interpretation. To carry el b'nei Yisrael. To deliver. He's in today's vocabulary, parlance, he would be Amazon Prime. Delivery man. He's the Amazon Prime delivery man. That is what Malachi is. He's a delivery man. He has a big package, a davar, a matter, haninsar, that was given over, le Malachi, lo says, to carry, also to deliver el b'nei Yisrael. He came on a nice electric van. He put in front of your house, he rang the bell, he took a picture, and he sent an email, your package has arrived. That's Malachi. Biyad Malachi, kivar hoye mosa biyada zeyamim rabin. Oh, so here he's come, Rashi's telling us what it means, biyad. Someone here made point of, Rav Kalman made a point of this. What does it mean, biyad? So biyad means he had to carry it a long time. It wasn't that the first moment he got the message, he delivered the message. Kvar hoya moser biyado ze yomim rabin. He had this already in his possession, this message in his possession. We said before, that's why it's called the burden. That's another interpretation of the things that we started with. Because he had to keep it, he had to hold on to it for a very long time. For a long time. Mikan darshu rabbeinu bebraisa b'mechilta. Shekol ha-nevim amdu al har Sinai. There's an incredible chazal, what it says over here. This is something which I never heard before in this chazal. V'sham nimsiru lochem hanavuos. V'chem Yeshaya oimer. Yeshaya says, me'es heyoisa sham. From the time you were there, me'es heyoisa sham oni, there was I. I was there. V'ata now Hashem elokim shalachani. From the time that you klal Yisrael, it's me'es when heyoisa sham. Heyoisa sham oni. Sham oni. I was there. From the time that you were there, I was there. And it's only now that Hashem has commanded me to deliver the message. So Rashi is telling us an incredible chiddush that you don't come across often. This chiddush is that all of the prophets were present at Har Sinai, and at that moment in time they were given prophecy, and they just carried it with them in their neshama, until the moment when Hashem told them to release the information, which in some cases is 1,000 years later. Now, obviously, they were not alive at that point in time, but their neshamas were there. Where else do you have such a principle? By Geirim. Chazal tell us, in famous Chazal, that every convert that enters, that succeeds in entering into Kanfei, into Klal Yisrael, his neshama was present at Har Sinai. His neshama was there. Chazal say, they say they go deeper, they said that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to all the nations and offered every single nation, do you want to accept the Torah? So the heads of state said, we do not want. But there were individual citizens who wanted. Okay, that's the way a country goes. You always have an election. Not everyone wins the election. You need 51%. What about the other 40? What about the 49%? What about the 49%? So they want someone else. Too bad for you. That's the way it goes. You take a vote. It's too bad for you. So this is a fascinating concept. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't follow majorities. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't run the world the way we run it. We run the world with majorities. Because that's how it is. There's no other way to live. You can't have everyone ish hayashu ben aviyase. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mifakeach schar kol bria. If there were citizens in the country who wanted the Torah, you could have the Torah. How? Come to Har Sinai. Come to Har Sinai. And those, whatever this all esoteric stuff, those neshamas came to Har Sinai, they heard the Hashem in Kabbalah Torah, and over the generations of time in history, their neshamas came forth, whatever all this esoteric stuff means, and they became geirim. Every time you witness a person who acknowledges, who says, I am a geir tzedek, that means his neshama was present at Har Sinai. He was from those neshamas that disagreed with his government and wanted to be Mekabel the Torah. And by extension, we have over here this incredible idea, over here in this Maamar Chazal, they're telling us that the prophets are the same like Geirim. All of the prophets in all history, their neshamas were there, and they heard the Nevuah at the time when Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe Klal Yisrael, and they just had to keep the secret until the time came. Now this is an explosive idea. It explains a lot of things, what we just said. Number one, we have in the Ani Mamins. Ani Mamin Shlema Shekol Divrei Nevi'im Emes. All the words of the prophets are true. Shalom Aleichem. Good to see you. And then we have another Ani Mamin. Animamim Shemoshe Rabbeinu is the Av. Animamim Bemun Shlomo Shenevuas Moshe. I forgot the words. I used to know it very hard in the old days when I used to really daven. I used to come early, used to daven in those days. Unfortunately, I'm long gone. But Animamim Moshe Rabbeinu is the Av, is the father of all prophets. Question: why do you have to have two separate principles of faith? For prophecy? I mean, no one here in this room would do that. If you were assigned to list off all of the elements, the ikorim of faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you would come up with these 13 things, when you put them on paper, it would be summarized in 12. You would not make Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy and the prophecy of all of everyone else's prophecy as two separate ikorim. You know, to be an Ikar is a big deal. You have one animamin that I believe all of the prophets are MS, and another animamin that Moshe was the Av, the father of all the prophets. I mean, of course, there are prophets. What? Okay, so obviously, but I mean, so what? A prophet is a prophet. So there are Moshe is of course the most powerful, and there are other prophets. Why is it broken down into two? What's going on? Why? So we get over here a little bit of a taste of the answer. All words of prophecy, when you as the average person, you learn about Nevuah. So what do you think? Oh. It came a point in time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu went and wanted to deliver a message. So there's a new revelation to this world. Vayered Hashem al Brooklyn. And he put into the mind of the prophet a message, and he delivered a new message. Oh, just like Hashem came down in Har Sinai. Hashem can come down on Har Sinai in Saudi Arabia. He can't come down to Brooklyn. Brooklyn's a lot better than Saudi Arabia. We have shuls, we have coffee, we have cake, Danishes, right? We have a lot of things in Brooklyn. It's much better than air conditioning. It's much better than Har Sinai. If Hashem can come down Har Sinai, Hashem can come down to Brooklyn. Why not? Why not? So that's every time you read about Yeshaya, about Yirmiyah. Hey, Yirmiyah, where's Yirmiyah? Yirmiyah is in Bavel, Al Nahar Kivar, right? So here this Chazal says wrong, 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 wrong. He totally got it all wrong. Hashem only came down to this world once, and that's it. It was a one-shot deal. This world was created 6 days, and Hashem, on Shishi B'Sivan, on the 7th day of Sivan, He came down to this world to reveal Himself. That's it. There's no encore. Done. On that day that Hashem came down to give the Torah, to reveal Himself to the entire world, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, He also gave over the messages in that revelation to every prophet that will ever exist throughout history until this world comes to an end. Here it is. Here's your package. I'm not coming down again. I'm not coming to Brooklyn. I don't do Brooklyn. I don't go to Lakewood. No Lakewood weddings. I don't do. I'm not going. I don't care. You can send me all the information. I am not coming down to this world anymore. We're done. I'm coming down Har Sinai. I'm giving you everything. One time. Moshe Rabbeinu, what I give him, he will immediately reveal. And as an extension of Moshe Rabbeinu bringing forth prophecy immediately, there's going to be, coming through the Koyach of Moshe, there's going to be packages of prophecy that, here, you, Yirmiyah, here's your prophecy. Yeshayah is your prophecy. Zechariah, here's yours. Malachi, here's yours. But don't say it now. Wait. Reveal the information in the right time. Carry it with you for 1,000 years until the world is ready to hear the message. When the world will understand the message and its context and within the message. So when we hear prophecy today, when we hear prophecy, when Malachi is giving over the prophecy, it's a maso. He has been carrying this prophecy from time immemorial, from the time of Matan Torah. It's an incredible idea. You never hear such an idea like this. It's an incredible chazal. And obviously, that automatically shows that the koyach of Malachi was rooted in Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Av Hanavi. Moshe Rabbeinu, he went, and he was the one that said the Aseres Adibra, that first two, we heard Derechim Kodesh Baruch Hu, but the remaining eight were said by Moshe Rabbeinu instantly. When Hashem came down, instant replay. Immediately it was expressed. Instantly. And then, the other messengers, they're different. They did not have the ability to release the information immediately. It had to be put away in storage for the right time and the right place. It's a game changer in how you look at prophecy. Now you'll say, but they weren't alive, it's 1,000 years. Listen, you're right. That we have no understanding. Just like we have this chazal, which is definitely a much more popular chazal about the gerim. Every ger, tzedek, his neshama was in Har Sinai. It's exactly the same principle. Har Sinai was the moment of everything. And what we're having now today is just a trickle-down effect. It's just a revelation of what happened over there. It's a very novel idea, and it changes, a game changer in the way we look at all forms of prophecy. Everything is rooted in Har Sinai. Okay, let's see over here another chazal. We're running out of time. Let's do one more, just a little bit. It's pretty late, but I want to just do a little bit. Okay, pause. Alfin Radak. Masad Rashem on page 863. Masad Rashem El Yisrael B'Yam Alochi. Chagai Yisrael Alochi. Heim Shemibu B'Lai Sheni. These, they are a team. We have to appreciate that. But Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, they're a team. And that also is a game changer. Because when you have three people, the sum is greater than the parts. Achut HaMeshulosh. They have something over Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, even though his prophecy was potent as can possibly be, there's only one man. Three people is a team. Three legs. One leg can't stand. You can't sit down on a chair that's only one leg. But you can sit down on something that has a tripod that's supported by three. You need three. Avraham, there's such a whole, all these ideas about why did we have three of us? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So we have to appreciate that even though Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi are the tail end of prophecy, it's the Gemar, but we went out with a bang. We went out with a bang that has a dimension of this prophecy is even greater than the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, if you can say such a thing. Because Moshe was only one person. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi is a team. It has, the sum is greater than the parts. And you gotta take it seriously. Same way you take Torah Moshe seriously. Adochi Hashem Elokecha, what these prophets say in one dimension is even more powerful. Okay? So Chagai, Zechariah Malachim, Shinu B'Vai Sheni, V'Chagai V'Zechariah Nitav, it says Zman Nivuasan, regarding the Nivuah of Chagai and Zechariah, we know the Zman of their Nivuah, because it says the actual date, exactly when he's coming, they're part of a team, so how can we have to compare one to the other? U'Malachi Lo Nichtav, why wasn't I really Yefshash, Ha'ya Acharayim Shemul, so he's saying over Efshah. He doesn't want to say which is very common in all the writings. And he says, Efshar, it's possible, Shohoye Acharin Shabohem, Vechein Yeroeh, he was last. Kiloy Niska, Bidvar, Binyan, Habayis, Kemosh Nisku, Chagai, Yuzachar, Yochemosh, Kosev, Vihisnabi, Chagai, Nivi Yo, Yuzachar, Yavar, Ido, Nivi Yo. The Omar, that's in Ezra, we're describing the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. The Omar, the Sovei Yehudoyei, the elders of the Jews, Bo-Nayin, were building the Beis HaMikdash. Umatz Lechin, were successful. Benevuas Chagai Nivio, Uzachariah Bar Ido. So he's saying like this, it was already built. It seems like he's saying over here is, if I'm not mistaken, that the reason why we're not mentioning, there is no mention of the building of the Beis HaMikdash in all of the words, Zuntayt, of the words of Malachi, is because his prophecy occurred after the building was complete. It already was over. It already was done. So Zechariah and Chagai and Zechariah in Sefer Ezra, their names are mentioned explicitly regarding the tekufa of the building of the Bayis Sheni, which means they were living in the time of the building, between the tail end of the 70 years of Golus and the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. In Malachi, you don't find any connection to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So what does that mean? You're going to say that he lived before, earlier? It either means that he was much earlier or he was much later. To say he's much earlier is not likely, because we have a tradition they were together. So the only thing you can say then, that he was after, meaning after the binyan was complete, he continued to give over messages from Hashem after, maybe after the other two died, or even if they were alive. And here we come to this listing with the same mention over here. The letter over here is Rabbi Sein Zal Amu, Malachi Ze Ezra. The Malachi is Ezra. The Loi Matsinu B'Shuv Mokam Shekoi Navi, Ella Ezra HaSofer. So we sing over here what Chazal say. Heshi, wow, look who's here. Heshi, how are you? Shalom Aleichem. Baruch Haba B'Shem Hashem. We welcome Heshi Barth to the Beis Medrash. Welcome. Now over here, there's a list of official words. Chazal tells us that Ezra HaSofer is Malach, and the Radak is not happy. He's not a happy kid. It's camp season now, and Ezra is not a happy camper. He wants to go home. He's homesick. He does not like this, because nowhere in all of our writings do we ever call Ezra a prophet. He's called Ezra HaSofer. And in the process, in the words of the Radak is Rishon, he's Megale, a secret, that the word Sofer doesn't just mean, it's a nice title. It's like, the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, right? What was the Chassam Sofer's name? Moshe Sofer. No, the word Sofer is not just, it's a nice appendage to the name. The word soifer is like the word novel. There's a word Chagai Hanovi, Yeshaya Hanovi. And we have a shofet, we have malachim, there are kings, there are David Hamelech. We have Shimshon is a shofet. I want to say is that the word soifer, for me at least, whenever Ezra has soifer. You can cut off the word cipher. Just say Ezra. You know, it's okay. I don't need the word cipher. I don't need last names. I don't need you to tell me that he was a scribe. What, he wrote Sifrei Torah? No. He was a counter. He was a counter. He would count how many svarim there were, how many bricks in the building there were. No. It means that he was a Talmud Chacham. Talmud is an expression. You'll tell me why. No. The word cipher is a sacred title, equivalent to the title of a melech, a navi, a shofet. There must be a nasi. So you want it? So you're saying an idea. You want to say the word gibor is also. You want to say. Let's say a very interesting idea. We have Shimshon a gibor. So is this gibor just a description? He was a strong man, a powerful man. Or maybe a gibor is a title which carries within it a major significance. What?
He didn't keep
the secret. Who did not keep? Well, he got him drunk.
Maybe they call him the Gibor. Maybe because he didn't qualify for the other title.
So he's saying over here, very, very powerful. The Radak is not saying, we don't find Malach is Ezra. V'loy matzonu b'shul makam shekaru navi. Now, so what? So I would say back to the Radak, who I'm just saying, so you didn't find he's called a Navi, big deal. So
and where,
what?
And where is his sefer place?
What?
Where is his sefer place?
Ksuvim. Oh, but David was David Melech Navi? He certainly was. So where is
his title?
Where is David's sefer place? In Ksuvim. Was David a Navi? He absolutely was a Navi.
There's a difference between
absolutely
having the Ruach.
Okay, fine. You'll have a question. So if the Radak just said, oh, we don't find Ezra being called a Navi. Okay, so we don't find it. Do we find David being called a Navi? Do we find Avraham Avinu being called a Navi? Do we find it? No, that's books. You're giving me books. We don't find Avraham called a Navi. I don't find Yaakov. Yaakov wasn't a Navi. We don't find Yaakov. We don't find the answer. So, I would say so we don't find him called a Navi.
The title was a book.
But he goes on to say something very powerful. Ezra, we find him called, the Torah gives him a title. And if the Torah gives you a title, that title means, that's right, this is who you are, you're not a Navi. Elo, Ezra has Sofer. Another title, Avinu, an Av. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. What's their title? Av. What is David's title? What is Shaul's title? Melech. What is Shmuel's title? Navi. What is Shimshon's title? You want to say a new din? Gibor. What was all of the Shoftim? Shofet. And now he says, I have a new title to add to the list. Sofer. Sofer is not just a description. He writes. He writes books. He's a Talmud Chacham. No! How dare you say that? Sofer is a title, just like Av is a title. Melech is a title. Navi is a title. A Shofet is a title. Gibor, you're suggesting, is a title. Sofer is a title. And if the Tanakh categorizes you as a Sofer, it means you're not a Navi. You're not a Navi. So don't go, because Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi are a team of Nevi'im. That's a given. They are accepted to be in the category of Nevi'im. If you're going to tell me that the Navi here is Ezra, can't be. If Ezra would never be given a title in Tanakh, Ezra, okay, I accept. Maybe Taka Malachi, Ezra was a Navi. That wasn't. But because the Torah went out of its way to say Ezra is a Sofer, and the word Sofer doesn't just mean that he wrote books, it means this is his title, but that's coming to exclude that he's not a Navi.
That mean Abraham
Avinu was an Av. An Av includes within a prophecy. Av is even higher than an Av. Having the title Av, you have all the perks, all the benefits.
There's an official roster would be in the
deal. There's an official, correct. So Malachi is on that roster. The question is, who is Malachi? Who's under the mask? Who's hiding under the mask of Malachi? Is it Ezra? But if Ezra is given a different title called Sofer, no. So we take away out of this principle. Sofer is not a description. Sofer is a title. Just like Melech, Av, Gibor, Navi, Sofer, it's a title. Okay. And that's why the Radak is entitled to disagree. We'll take a very short break, and then we're going to learn a little more about Minhagim
Eruyah. Melech was a Melech, right? And he was also
a Navi. A Melech is a buff. If a person is called a Melech...
Most of the Malachim did not have
the... Okay, you're right. You're saying, good, there are certain Malachim. David was a Melech, and David was also a Navi. But yet, David's role is not defined... David's role is not defined as a Navi. That's not the way we look at David. It's true that he had prophecy, and other kings did not have prophecy.
Yeah.
If Malachi is called a Navi, he's part of the Nevi'im,
right.
He's part of the Trei Asar, he's part of the Raster, and Ezra is called the Sofer, it's irrelevant if Ezra also gave over prophecy. Maybe Ezra also was a prophet, maybe he was, but he cannot be called Malachi. Because if Malachi is called a Navi, and Ezra is called the Sofer, then they cannot be the same person. We're not taking away from the fact that maybe Ezra did give over words of prophecy. But if he gave over words of prophecy, he cannot be the person called Malachi, because the fact that they're given different titles completely separates them entirely, regardless of what exactly they were able to do, their kochos hanefesh. All right, let's take a short break, and then I want to talk about some woman home that we do in honor. What? I want to wish a hearty Mazel Tov to Rabbi Michal Miller, who was blessed with a new great grandson. What? Oh, granddaughter. Big difference. I'm sorry, a great granddaughter. A new great granddaughter to their children, Ahuva. No, I'm sorry, I'm all mixed up. Adina and her husband?
Zevi.
Adina and Zevi. Schwartz of Lakewood, New Jersey. That I got right. Lakewood, New Jersey. That part I got right. The only thing I got right was Lakewood. Well, that's going to do me. Okay, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. A lot of nachas. Mazel Tov.
We have over 12 people here today.
I'm saying it takes a little time.
Okay, no problem.
Who's that?
Ezra Fried.
Ezra,
where are you? Are you back in the States?
I am.
Wow. How was your trip?
Wonderful. Too short.
I saw that video. What was that video by the Kaisel? Which Rebbe was that?
That was the Mishkalzer Rebbe.
Who's that? So what were your highlights? Okay. Welcome back.
Thank you.